talk to us now and go to the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT. Fighting tyranny and government overreach. This is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio.
Hello, welcome to the Mark Morano Show, coming at you live on TNT Radio. This is taped on April 8th, 2023. We have a fantastic show for you today here. We are going to be talking the latest in the wacky world of climate, which I always think of, well, I'm going to talk about something. It's just so much going on this week, so much going on every week. And I think you'll hear stuff here that, unless you're reading my website, climatedepot.com, you're not going to hear anywhere else. It is just so over the top. But we are also going to be joined in our second segment after the break, later this morning, by Rainier Zeitelman, author of The Defense of Capitalism, Is the New Financial Crisis Exposing Capitalism? And it's going to be a fascinating guest. We're going to talk about the underpinnings of what's happening in our world. I'll ask him, of course, about a little bit about stakeholder capitalism promoted by the World Economic Forum and woke and ESG, and also whether capitalism is to blame for the free trade deals and we've done with China, and if there's any limits to that in terms of are we empowering China and would protectionism help us there? Fascinating economic discussion. But I'll talk about his book, and his book, of course, is called Defense of Capitalism. So looking forward to that. Meanwhile, the news this week. Well, let's start with the wacky, and then we'll work our way to a bit more serious. But, you know, they're all serious, even if they're presented as wacky. Well, one of the biggest articles this week was, and I'm not making this up, the Washington Post. And I can't say this enough. Everyone always thinks, oh, you found some obscure blogger or someone's tweet and he's making a mountain out of a molehill. No, this is the Washington Post official climate coach. The climate coach is actually a job at the Washington Post. It's someone who coaches you along in your transition. And no, we're not talking about gender, but your transition to a climate holy person, a sustainable human being. And his name at the Washington Post is Michael J. Corin. Well, what did he have to say this week? Let's see what the climate, and by the way, I never heard of this guy before this week, but apparently a climate coach with the Washington Post is a thing. So who knew? Quote, you need a bidet or recycled toilet tissue. Washington Post climate coach takes a swipe at toilet paper usage. Quote, we may come to see wiping our bums with extra soft toilet paper as we do smoking cigarettes, unquote. And this whole article went on to guilt the world, and particularly Americans. The typical person in the United States uses 24 rolls of toilet paper per year. We flush the equivalent of millions of trees down the toilet. Nearly a quarter of the world's last intact forest landscapes are in this region, the National Resources Defense Council saying. And they're saying it stores the same amount of carbon as three decades worth of fossil fuel emissions. So by using toilet paper, particularly the plush kind, you are apparently clearing old growth forests, and there's no such thing as a virgin forest, by the way. And they're actually saying that we're using the same amount as three decades worth of fossil fuel emissions. So every time you wipe your bleep, you are worsening global warming, according to the climate coach. One day we may come to see, and I mentioned this quote about smoking cigarettes. So is this the first time, and I'll get into a little bit of the science, but first of all, 2007, I was working in the U.S. Senate Environment and Public Works. Sheryl Crow, the singer, did a whole bizarre rant. I don't know how much of it was joke, how much serious, but it was following the serious impulse. You should only use one square of toilet paper to wipe, apparently. And of course, over the years, and I detail this at Climate Depot, there have been attacks at Charmin toilet paper. I've interviewed the nanny, Fran Drescher, at an event maybe, I don't know, it's probably, 15 years ago, where she was waging a war on the use of toilet paper, talking about virgin growths. A very nice lady. In fact, I actually am impressed with her now because she's spoken out. She's the head of the Screen Actors Guild, Fran Drescher, who played the nanny. And she's actually come out against the vax mandates and all the COVID theater. Now, it was probably 2.5 years late, but it's still, she came out, still insanity like that going on in Hollywood. So I don't want to, anyway, I was at the Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro, not Rio de Janeiro, but in, I was at Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro, but this was the Earth Summit in Johannesburg, South Africa, 2002, 21 years ago. And they had lamented the introduction of the flush toilet at this Earth Summit. The average American, according to analysis, spends over $11,000 on toilet paper over their lifetime, enough to buy a Rolex watch. Fast Company magazine has said toilet paper has a devastating impact on climate change. It's destroying forests that pull carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. And I did an analysis about a decade ago saying, have we reached bottom? Reusable toilet paper touted to save the planet. Say hello to the family cloth reusable toilet paper. Eco-friendly, washable. So, and I've done articles on the compost toilet. And what this is a whole movement. It's not just toilet paper. They want us to get rid of indoor plumbing because it's not sustainable. And they actually have these compost. And I did it, my article, which I had done on this, details how bugs and flies come out of these things and how family, I mean, you're putting them inside. Obviously, a compost toilet is fantastic for camping and for RV use and other things like that. But they're talking about using it in your home in a sealed environment instead of your plumbing toilet. Now, of course, people do this all over the world. There's 1 billion people don't have adequate access to running water, electricity. So they're doing their own version of compost toilets. In many cases, a hole in the ground, but it's usually not inside. The compost toilet brings it inside. And I'm sure there's all kinds of new technologies that cover it up and keep it clean. Anyway, this is a war we've already detailed on this show, going after dryers, like it was last week, washing machines, dishwashers, gas stoves, gas-powered cars, your air conditioning, your ability to eat meat. You'll stay at home, you'll go nowhere, be happy. And now, of course, they're coming hard after toilet paper. And again, this is, when the Washington Post runs an article like this, what they're basically doing is they're sending a signal that this is what the powers that be, academia, the corporate interests, the ideological bent at the United Nations, that means it's coming more to fruition. They're testing it out. They're pushing it, getting people to think about it. Now, in terms of bidets, I have heard a lot of rave reviews about them. People love it. They sell them now, a few hundred dollars. You can get an attachment to your toilet, but I think it's complicated to get the plumbing running. But the idea is you sit down and you don't need toilet paper. You get sprayed with I think it's even heated water that comes at you. But here's the question. Isn't that just wasting more water? Plus you're heating the water, you're getting electricity, increasing your electric bill. I mean, it's just, everything is just a shift. It's more, not about what the end result is. It's about that fact that they want to tell you what you can and can't do, mandate it, regulate it, make it a part of the criminal code. So that is one of the things. So speaking of the criminal code, we had, I talked about that last week, making climate homicide a climate deaths and now thing, changing the criminal code to that. So I won't go back over that. But this week, JP Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon said that we need to evoke eminent domain. The government should seize private property to build wind and solar farms. No doubt that we're going to need more of those so we can get the electricity to heat the water from the bidet so that you don't need to use toilet paper to save the forest so we can save those CO2 emissions that the old growth forests are sequestering. Anyway, the window for action to revert climate change is closing, according to the JP Morgan CEO, Jamie Dimon. And he goes on and he just says, it's inane stuff. People said, do we only have, someone on Twitter made an apt comment, is it really just morons running all of these companies? And this is what they are. He's also promoted diversity, equity, inclusion efforts. And this whole idea of using, and they're saying this may be the new threat for businesses, private homes. The idea is your property will be seized. And why would you need to seize it for solar and wind? The reason is, in order to even come, the average footprint of a solar wind farm doesn't produce anywhere near the energy of a footprint, the same footprint for fossil fuel. And there was one estimate, 79 solar workers were needed to equal the work of one coal plant worker, just to give you an idea how dense and productive fossil fuels are compared to solar. Now, solar can employ a lot more people. Wow, look at all the jobs, green jobs. But it depends on subsidies, massive subsidies, mandates, and it depends on the idea that you're going to have a lot of people and a lot of overhead to produce very little energy, where it's actually more impressive when fossil fuels can produce massive amounts of energy for very little amount of, you know, necessary input on the other end. So in this annual letter to J.P. Morgan, he said the government should seize private property, and he suggested green initiatives should be embraced to meet the net zero targets. It's a completely bought and paid for company. J.P. Morgan, beware. Other wacky news this week. The Associated Press, global warming is, I'm not making this up, global warming is juicing home runs in Major League Baseball. And according to this study, which was by the American Meteorological Society, you'd think they'd be focusing on meteorology. Anyway, they project an extra 467 home runs by the year 2100. Now, this is in baseball, so we now know that it's now 2023. So it's 87 years, there's going to be 467 more home runs. We know this because the climate modelers in a study by the American Meteorological Society told us so. Climate change is juicing home runs. It's just phenomenal. But here's the thing. I did an article and I showed some of the interesting backstory to this. Oakland baseball player blames hitting woes on cold weather. That was one of the stories. Carbon tax save baseball bats. The New York Times in 2014 said, quote, an unlikely victim of climate change. New York Yankees Derek Jeter's favorite baseball bat is now threatened because a source, warmer winters, a beetle is thriving in those in the warmer winters, which is now affecting the forests, which are a source for these cherished wood bats. So, here's a question. If the wood bats aren't going to be as good because of the beetles caused by global warming destroying these forests, how are they going to have these 467 extra home runs? What are they going to be using? Synthetic bats? Inferior wood bats? It seems like the climate modelers at the American Meteorological Society should have allowed for the fact that the beetles were destroying, due to global warming, destroying the forests, which were making the great bats, if you're taking that away. And of course, they've done this before. Stradivarius, violins, all sorts of wind, all these instruments are going to be destroyed by global warming. Anyway, so silly. But just to show you how in-depth this is, the New York Yankees have signed on to the UN climate agreement. They became the first major sports team to sign up for the, quote, UN Sports for Climate Action Framework, unquote. So when you're rooting for the New York Yankees, you're also rooting for the United Nations. And also, 56 studies have done, and these are all modeling studies, global warming will increase road rage and fights at baseball games. So that's another question. If you're on a hot streak and there's all these fights breaking out in the stadium or between players, won't that affect the home runs in 2100? Baseball's Tim McCarver, global warming increasing the number of home runs. This has been around for years. And it's also major league announcers. Other people have done it. So this is just some of the silliness we're getting. I'm gonna move on because I have gonna play some audio clips here in a minute. Elon Musk this week came out a plan to save the world without coal and oil, and he claims it saves trillions of dollars. Converting the world entirely to clean energy requires only $10 trillion worth of investment compared to $14 trillion to stay on fossil fuels. I mean, it's basic arithmetic. Come on. 10 trillion, we can save the world with solar and wind, or we have to spend 4 trillion more to stay on fossils and the world dies and it costs more money. That sucks, man. That's a terrible deal. I wonder if Elon Musk has any interest in this. I'm starting to dislike Elon Musk once again, as much as I have before. He's doing all kinds of weird crap on Twitter. I couldn't even tweet Substack articles this week. It wouldn't let me do it. Apparently, he's banning those. He's doing still shadow banning. He's just not doing, living up to this free speech promise. And I knew there was a problem when he said, I'm not going to allow Twitter to become a free speech hellscape. Well, guess what? I want that free speech hellscape. And I don't want Elon Musk Twitter. Sorry, I know there's a lot of listeners out there who think Elon Musk is a great guy and he's done a few great things, but I think this is more illusion than reality. We have Matt Taibbi now announcing he's leaving Twitter or doesn't know what to do. Michael Schellenberg, all their Substacks are going to be banned, or I guess the word would be demoted on that platform. They're very hard to promote because Elon Musk wants to do his own. It's just, It's just self-interest crap. He's no better than any of the other ones. And a lot of people allowed themselves to get very excited by all this, by his efforts. But I think in the end, he's going to wash out. Anyway, what I said about Elon Musk's claims here on the energy report that he did, Elon Musk is living in a green energy fantasy utopian vision. Much like 2 weeks to flatten the curve, we're told just $10 trillion to transition our energy to so-called renewable. Perhaps Musk is trying to win back some positive media after advocating for free speech on Twitter and taking hits on his various business enterprises. The way forward is to use technology and cheap, reliable energy to build America's economy, not derail the entire economy based on a fantasy of green energy based on a premise of a climate crisis, the false premise. Renewables dig the earth, not in a 1970s Brady Bunch way, but literally dig the earth deep into the earth for rare earth mining. Green energy, reliability, prosperity are always just around the corner. In this case, a $10 trillion corner. And then, of course, Robert Bryce, the energy expert, did a great analysis, horrible, no good, very bad math on Elon's terrible energy plan. This is what I was having trouble because it was a Substack article and it was against Elon. It would not let me tweet. Twitter was having problems with this. Try again later. I did screenshots. I put this out and later found out it was because of the Substack issue. But it says here, the master plan for weather-dependent renewables requires 960 years of gigafactory battery output. And he called Elon Musk's energy plan, quote, gobsmackingly silly, unquote. Someone in Tesla might think about investing in a calculator. That's what Robert Bryce, the energy expert, said of Elon Musk's insane, wacky plan to spend $10 trillion. Anyway, so that is on that front. I was going to play a quick audio clips here. Some interesting things. I've talked in this show before about this whole climate movement and degrowth. Here is Jordan Peterson talking about scientists for degrowth. These are planned recessions to fight global warming. It's austerity. And remember, austerity means no toilet paper, no washing machine, no dishwasher, no gas stoves, no gas-powered cars, no meat, controlled thermostats on your home, limited flying. This is Jordan Peterson, clip one.
Scientists for degrowth. So what's degrowth? Well, here's the proposition. There's no way the planet can sustain the number of people it has on it at anywhere near the level of prosperity that those privileged to be in the West have managed in the last 30 years, let's say. And so, you know, those of us in the West, except for consultants, are going to have to tighten their belts and, you know, suck that gut in a few notches. Now, that'll mean that people in the developing world can put the bloody belt around their neck and tighten it until it's the noose that kills them, but it doesn't really matter because there's too many people on the planet anyways. And so this degrowth philosophy that's driving Canadians into penury, especially poor Canadians, isn't a bug, it's a feature. It's driven by this agenda that assumes that we're yeast in a petri dish and that we'll keep on multiplying insanely and parasitically until there's so many children on the planet that, you know, every animal is going to go extinct. And we better put limits to growth on as fast as possible. Stop doing things like flying around the world or owning private automobiles or heating our houses in the winter. It isn't only that we're going to be poor, it's that we bloody well better be poor because it's a moral crime to be otherwise. I mean, the whole damn planet's at stake, which is an absolutely preposterous pack of lies that's so corrupt that it's almost incomprehensible.
On the head, I love when he said it's not a feature, it's not a bug, it's a feature. And that's exactly right. These are the intended consequences. They believe if we, the unwashed masses, are left to our own devices, we will destroy the planet, create inequity, racism, etc. He nails it right on the head. On the same vein, on clip four, this is Bill Maher, shocking, giving advice to the environmental movement about how they're failing. This is referencing Bill Maher, but this is humanprogress.org telling us how Bill Maher is wrong, saying there's too many people on the planet with too few resources. So let's hear this. This is going after Bill Maher on the same basic topic.
And yet there are people, and I think you're one of them, who wants us to have more babies. I don't get this to connect those dots for me, because I think the problem with the environment basically is too many people using too few resources.
We use stuff, but we also grow stuff. What matters is new knowledge. Think about something as simple as sand. When we started melting down sand to create glass, we used the first glass for glass beads or jars. But now we are using glass in fiber optic cables and microchips.
Similar innovation in farming, transportation, genetic engineering is why our growing population won't destroy nature. But we're told we're destroying forests.
Looks like a disease across the planet. Boom, there goes the forest.
Nonsense. Forests have grown by 35% in North America and Western Europe in the last 20 years.
Grown because people found ways to produce more food on less land.
All right, that was actually John Stossel, promoted by the humanprogress.org. Very well said. And Bill Maher has been doing this. There was another clip of Bill Maher, which I forgot to get, which he basically advises the environmental movement not to keep doing these climate tipping point deadlines because they're being made foolish. We now have dozens and dozens of examples going back to Abraham Lincoln was president, 1864, warning us that if we don't change our ways, the climate is doomed. So that was funny. But I think that was a great thing. And it's actually what Stossel said there in the interviews he presented is exactly right. If someone said that the piano has a fixed number of keys, imagine someone saying, well, you can only play certain music. That's it. There's only that many keys. That's all we can do is just play 50 songs. There's no way more because we need more. Without more piano keys, we couldn't do it. You could literally play billions of different songs on a piano with different key combinations and notes and chords. And this is what he's talking about. And he used the example of glass. You could use it on anything. It's human innovation. And we're not, in many cases, we're not even talking strictly about science or engineering. It's just a concept, an idea that someone has and a new application. It could be the simplest way that starts from the bottom up, not in some federally funded lab or something. So amazing, amazing stuff. Okay, I wanted to play clip three. This is Ron DeSantis this week. This was the event I attended, the Pennsylvania Leadership Conference. I did my show live from the conference last week. The next day after my radio show for TNT, Ron DeSantis, governor of Florida, came and just nailed the COVID narrative beautifully. This is clip three, Ron DeSantis at the Pennsylvania Leadership Conference the morning after I spoke at the same event.
Not only did Florida get it right, these experts like Fauci got it wrong. They were wrong on lockdowns. They were wrong on masking. They were wrong on saying schools needed to be closed. They were wrong on denying the existence of natural immunity. They were wrong about the efficacy of mRNA shots. They were wrong about denying that the COVID virus came from a lab in Wuhan, China. So my question is, where is the accountability for these people for all the damage that they did to our country?
Wow, very well said. I was very impressed. However, as I was saying this week, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. officially announced for president. I don't want to open a whole can of worms there, but I am very intrigued by him. He is the Democrats' Donald Trump, an FU to the system. His focus on anti-war and also his focus on the COVID public health authoritarianism and anti-corporate fascism, government corporate collusion and free speech makes him a very attractive candidate. And I've been written up in Media Matters for America as promoting and supporting RFK Jr.'s candidacy. I'm very intrigued by him, as I am Vivek Ramaswamy. I wish there could be a combination of Trump and DeSantis and RFK Jr. The problem I have with RFK Jr., though, is I think his anti-energy policies could be overriding. And he hasn't fleshed those out. He has evolved, I think, on climate. He just no longer talks about the climate scare. His website talks about UN, the evils of UN sustainability, warns of climate lockdowns. It's really a sea change. He knows that the same people pushing the COVID authoritarianism he's been opposing are the same people pushing the climate agenda. So it'll be interesting to see where Robert F. Kennedy Jr. fleshes out on that. But anyway, we have coming up after the break, Rainier Zeitelman, author of The Defense of Capitalism. He'll be joining us to talk about the world today in economics. This is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's State of the Nation.
New York City Mayor Eric Adams says don't come here today because we don't want any chaos or crime in New York City. What a joke. Today is a historic day for all Americans. It's a historic day for the legal profession. No, I'm not a lawyer, but what is going on here in New York City is nothing short of a circus. We have 38,000 uniformed police officers all on duty. I don't know what exactly they're doing because there's nobody out on the streets. We also have, for this one day to indict Donald Trump, over $230 million being spent by DA Alvin Bragg, who ran on his platform for election. He said, "I will get Donald Trump," as did New York State Attorney General Letitia James. She ran on the platform, "I will get Donald Trump."
Well, you're right. It's a historic day, isn't it? This has never happened before. The pendulum has fully swung now, at least as far as the progressives go and the Never Trump crowd. And how hard will it hit when it goes back to the right is the big question here. This is going to be all we're hearing about for a while. So my eyes are on what we're being distracted from, like our financial system being destroyed.
State of the Nation on TNT Radio.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Child labor and toxic leaks. The price we pay for a greener future. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. We're joined now by Rainer, I hope I'm saying his name correctly, Rainer Zeitelman. Author of The Defense of Capitalism. He worked at the Central Institute for Social Science Research at the Free University of Berlin. He was awarded a doctorate a few years back in The Wealth Elite. He wrote a book called The Wealth Elite at the University of Potsdam. His thesis was that. So he is the author of the book Defense of Capitalism. Welcome to our program, Dr. Zeitelman.
Yes, hello. And I listened to the last 30 minutes to your show, and it's very, very interesting for me because, you know, I think all this climate change is a pretext for abolishing capitalism. And did I got it right? I heard that the Washington Post has a climate change coach. Is it what I heard?
Yes, that's right. Yes, that's what you heard.
Yeah, let's take you away. Let's take you a little bit in the future. I tell you something what happens here in Germany, because maybe this is the future of the United States. We have here now a book bestseller with the title The End of Capitalism. And the author, she's very, very popular, and she openly promotes a planned economy. Although this has already failed once in Germany. And now I tell you what on her. I think this climate change coach from Washington Post would be fascinated for her. She said, in general, people should not eat so much. 2,500 calories a day are enough. And she says exactly what should your daily intake. 500 grams of fruit and vegetables, 232 grams of wholemeal or rice, and 13 grams of eggs, and even 7 grams of pork. And there would be no more flights, no more private cars. The state should determine almost every facet of daily life. For example, there would no longer be any single family houses, and no one would be allowed to own a second one. New construction would be banned because it's harmful to the environment. And instead, existing land would be distributed fairly with the state deciding how much space is appropriate for each individual. And, you know, this all is because she says it's necessary to abolish capitalism for climate change. And you see, it's a worldwide movement, and she's not any outsider. You can see her almost every day here in all this mainstream talk shows in the TV.
What's her name? What's her name?
Ulrike Hermann is her name. Ulrike Hermann is her name. And, you know, this is a problem. Climate change, this topic, is for a lot of people only a pretext to abolish capitalism. And this is totally stupid. You know, in my book, in my new book, In Defense of Capitalism, I have one chapter only about this environment, climate change. And here are some facts. You know, I come from Germany, what you see with my accent. And it's very easy to compare here capitalism and socialism because, you know, we were a divided country with East and West, with East socialism, West capitalism. The same country, the same culture, the same history, the same language, only different economic system. And can I tell you one thing? CO2 emissions were three times higher in East Germany than in West Germany. And also other airborne pollutions were 10 times higher there. So socialism or planned economy is not the problem. It makes things worse. And this is what we know from history, because planned economy has never solved any problem in the last 100 years, but has caused many new problems. And these people who want to tell us we should abolish capitalism or even we should have a planned economy to solve the problem of climate change, they will make things for the environment even worse.
Well, okay, we're talking to Rainier Zitelman, author of The Defense of Capitalism. Yeah, because if you look at what the United Nations says, what academia, what's all the solutions, the Green New Deal, UN Paris agreements, every single solution to climate change that is proposed on the regional, local, or global stage is about a managed economy and literally micromanaged economy down to what appliances, how much water, how much energy, down to thermostat controls, to banning gas-powered cars, to limiting air travel, we have MasterCard and the United Nations teamed up to have a new credit card to monitor your carbon footprint. And when you hit your carbon footprint max as calculated by MasterCard, they cut off your ability to spend. Does any of that, I mean, is that a kind of future that would save the climate in your view?
No, yes. And you have to understand, maybe they don't call it socialism, but of course it is socialism. But because the difference between socialism and capitalism is very easy. Capitalism, in the end, consumer decide what is produced. Entrepreneurs decide, but in the end, it's the consumer. Capitalism is democracy, because we decide every day what is produced and what not. And planned economy is that politicians and government officials decide what is produced. This is the difference between both. And whether they call it socialism or not, of course, it is socialism.
All right, well, let's look at overview. First of all, what your book, In Defense of Capitalism, I believe just came out in 2023, you go through the 10 greatest anti-capitalist fallacies. Do you want to go through those? We could almost go one at one. Your first one says capitalism is responsible for hunger and poverty. And we hear this all the time. The inequity, the idea of poor people is the result of the capitalist system. What's your response to that?
First of all, the book is published 2 weeks ago, brand new.
Yes.
And it's published in 30 languages all over the world. Yes. To refer to this, hunger and poverty, this is crazy. 200 years ago, before capitalism, 90% of the worldwide population lived in extreme poverty, 90%. Today, it's less than 10%. And half of this reduction happened over the last decade. So capitalism is the best system to fight poverty, to fight against hunger. And another fact that I have in this chapter, what a lot of people don't know, if you speak about famines, most people think about Africa, but the truth is 80% of people who died in famines in the 20th century were in socialist Soviet Union and socialist China. Even the so-called Great Leap Forward by Mao Zedong, this was in the end of the 50s, 45 million people died with this biggest socialist experiment in history. And I ask people, you know, I have my lectures everywhere in the world, in Europe, in the United States. I just came today from the United States, in Latin America, everywhere. And I ask people, have you heard at school or university about this biggest socialist experiment, the so-called Great Leap Forward, where 45 million people died? And there, wherever I speak, whether it's to 20 people, 200, 2,000, there are only a few hands to raise up because they haven't heard about this at school.
Wow. That's literally, though, the idea that capitalism is creating this poverty and hunger, that is that is ingrained in children now across the country. All right, well, let's continue. So capitalism, same vein. Capitalism leads to inequality. So I remember Ronald Reagan famously said in 1964 speech for Barry Goldwater, you know, the socialist can't look at the fat man and the thin man and without thinking that the fat man got that way at the expense of the thin man. Does capitalism lead to inequality?
First of all, I don't care about inequality. I care about poverty. These are two absolutely different questions. I give you one example. I was now in Vietnam, and they call themselves communists and socialists, but I guarantee you one thing, it's harder to find a Marxist in Vietnam than in the United States or in Europe.
My impression is Vietnam is booming under capitalism right now, isn't it?
Yes,
is
that true? Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, they invited me from the most prestigious university, Foreign Trade University. They invited me for a workshop. How can we improve image of rich people? Can you imagine a university in the United States invites me to have a workshop, how to improve image of rich people? So, but why did I mention Vietnam? Because yes, today people are more unequal than they were in the 90s when Vietnam was the poorest country in the world, poorer than African countries. But I found no one there who told me, hey, let's go back to the 90s because we were more equal. No, they are happy that they reduced poverty. And, you know, people who are concerned about inequality, this is only envious people. So this is the problem. So we should discuss much more about poverty, about hunger and poverty, not about inequality.
All right. Well, we have to take a break right now, but we will be right back. We're talking with Rainer Zeitelman, author of In Defense of Capitalism. And we're going to continue on the 10 myths of capitalism. We'll be right back after these messages.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
What I'm about to read to you here is from the Cornwall Alliance. It's on climate imperialism. Last October, John Kerry suggested that the Democratic Republic of Congo should abandon their oil blocks it had put up for auction. However, for the people of the Congo, some of the poorest in the world, that could mean more years of pollution, ill health from dirty cooking fuels such as charcoal. Welcome to the 21st century climate imperialism in Africa. Prominent form of modern slavery is that climate imperialism or eco-colonialism, where restrictive energy policies conceived and promoted by politicians in Western economies are forced on some of the world's poorest. Though branded as environmentally friendly, these outlandish policies deny economic growth to those who need it most in Africa's poor country. Yes, the West's war on fossil fuels, which is being promoted with draconian policies in developing countries, adds to the obstacles to overcoming the deprivation and the sadness that is the life of a lot of these people because they are running behind. And you can see exactly what is going on. 41% of the population in sub-Saharan Africa lives in extreme poverty. The least we could do is let them have the tools to pull themselves out of the poverty. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's news talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Mark Morano on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Mark Morano Show. We're talking with Rainer Zitelman in Defense of Capitalism. His brand new 2023 book is out, and we're going through the myths of capitalism. Now, I'm going to skip for the moment capitalism is responsible for environmental destruction and climate change, because I opened the show talking about that, and we just talked about that a little bit. Well, if we want, we can get back to that, but let's go to the next one. Capitalism leads to new economic and financial crises. Now, this is one, Dr. Zitelman, where people will say, oh, look at the bank failure, look at the real estate failure, look at, you know, all these, the government, the private banks are all failing. Is that due to capitalism, or could that be due to government meddling or government policies?
I have a lot of facts in this chapter, and I can tell you only here maybe a few very short. As legend would have it, the 2008 financial crisis was caused by radical deregulation. In fact, of the 28 different measures introduced to either regulate or deregulate the financial industries in the years from 1980 to 2009, so the very same time in which they were supposed to have unrestrained deregulation of the American financial industry, only five actually cut regulation. The other 23 created additional regulation. And indeed, there was nothing like laissez-faire capitalism in the financial markets. Immediately before the financial crisis, 12,100 people were working full-time on regulating financial market in Washington, D.C. alone, five times as many as in the 60s. And so, you see, this is wrong that the financial crisis was caused by deregulation. The contrary is correct. It was caused by the crazy policy of the Federal Reserve. And you see, now even things become worse. To fight the results of the crisis, they did the same what they did before, with the zero interest rates and all this stuff. And it was crystal clear that sooner or later, this would cause another inflation. First, there was an inflation in house prices and on the stock market, and now there's even inflation in consumer prices. Now they have to rise interest rates again, or they did it, and then as a result, banks get into problems. You know, this is like a circle caused by intervention of the Federal Reserve and the government.
Wow. Okay. Very good. Here's one I like. I'd like to hear your thoughts. Capitalism is dominated by the rich. They set the political agenda. That's your chapter five. And you debunk that. But let me just set this up. People will say, well, the Rockefellers of old set the agenda, and they were the wealthy elites. You have Klaus Schwab and Bill Gates today. These capitalists, which I would argue neither one of them is a capitalist, but they're the capitalists dominating this agenda. What exactly is this true, that is dominated by the rich, and that the rich set the agenda?
If it would be true for my country, for Germany, no one would believe it. I will soon come to the United States, but let's give you first example of my country. We, in our country, phased out nuclear power plants. Then we start to phase out coal power plants. We forbid fracking, and now we import fracking gas from the United States. Would you think rich people would be so crazy to do this? No, these are politicians, ideologically driven. And if rich people would rule in Germany, nothing of this would happen. This is what the ideologists do. But let's speak about the United States. Of course, it's true you can't be president of the United States without raising a lot of money. But this is not all. For example, if it would be all about money, Donald Trump would never have been president of the United States. Why? Because, yes, he raised $600 million, but Hillary raised double, $1.2 billion. And Joe Biden would have never been president of the United States, but Michael Bloomberg, because Michael Bloomberg was the eighth richest man in the world with $62 billion net worth. And he spent $1 billion in 3 months without any effect. So you see, it's not so easy to say that the rich rule. Otherwise, there would never have been Donald Trump. There would never be Joe Biden. It would be Michael Bloomberg. It's much more complicated.
Okay. Your next chapter, chapter six, capitalism leads to monopolies. Now, this, how do you distinguish between capitalism and sort of a corporate government collusion, government policies on that? I guess you're talking about a, because there seems to be monopolies. You have people like the aforementioned Bill Gates. You have the big tech monopolies, which are protected by government policies. People, the problem, I guess, we probably should have started the show with how do you define capitalism? Because people look at our world today and they call Klaus Schwab, the World Economic Forum, a capitalist. They'll call China's system capitalism, which I guess it's got elements of free markets. But so before we talk about whether capitalism leads to monopolies, give us a quick definition of how you define capitalism in your book.
You know, there is no pure capitalism nowhere in the world, as there is no pure socialism everywhere in the world. It's all mixed systems. And the important thing is, imagine like a test tube with two ingredients, market and state, or capitalism and socialism. And then you look what happens if you add more market, as they did in China, for example. Of course, it's nowhere pure capitalism, but they add pure more market, private property, and now people are much better off than they were in socialist times. And what they did in Venezuela, for example, they add much more state, and the result is that people live in poverty today in Venezuela. So there is no pure capitalism or pure socialism in the world, but the problem is that the so-called capitalist countries become more and more economically unfree. Here, only one thing that may be shocking for you. Have you heard about the Index of Economic Freedom from the Heritage Foundation?
Yes, I've heard of that.
It's published every year. It's a rating how economically free are countries all over the world. The most economically free countries are countries like Switzerland or Singapore, and at the bottom, it's North Korea, Venezuela, and Cuba. And now the bad news. United States had now this year, it was published a few weeks ago, the worst ranking ever since they started with this index. Today, even 16 European countries, according to this index, are more economically free than the United States. 16 European countries. So imagine, and that doesn't mean that we are economically free in Europe. No, by nowhere. We have a lot of problems there with economic freedom. But it means that situation became worse in the United States, and it's the worst ranking. And now let's speak about monopolies. Of course,
yes,
capitalism can lead to monopolies. This is true. But what is much more important, capitalism destroys monopolies. When monopolies are on the height of their power, everyone thinks you can't beat them. They will last forever, like maybe today Google or Amazon or Microsoft. But this is not true. I have some examples in my book. For example, Xerox, they had a market share in the United States of 95%. Xerox, even I think today you say Xeroxing for making a photocopy in the United States. Today it's less than 2%. So from 95 to 2%. Or another example, another example is from monopolies, MySpace. There was a headline I quoted in my book in the Guardian 2007. Will MySpace ever lose its monopoly? Was the headline. If I ask today young people what is MySpace, they haven't heard about it. And yeah. In Forbes magazine, there was the cover the same year, Nokia, who will ever call the cell phone king? It was about the Nokia monopoly. Who uses Nokia cell phone today? And or Kodak cameras, maybe you remember that 85% market share in the United States. Yes, this is a monopoly, but all these monopolies were destroyed. Not by the government, not by antitrust legislation. They were destroyed by capitalism, by competition. And the only real harmful monopoly is the state monopoly. And another word for the state monopoly is socialism. So what I don't understand, if you discuss with anti-capitalists, in one moment they say, oh, it's so bad, there are so much monopolies. And half hour later, you discuss with them and they vote for nationalization of some companies. But this is the monopolies. So this is crazy. This is a contradiction.
All right, let me jump to chapter 10 because it's really the heart of, I think, what America is dealing with right now. Capitalism means there's always a danger of fascism. And for my purposes, I want to talk about the corporate government collusion. Right now in the United States, we have big tech colluding with our government to literally crush free speech. We now know through Freedom of Information Act that the government, Biden administration, our national security state, FBI, CIA, we're telling big tech, censor this person, put in this algorithm, suppress this idea, don't allow this, don't allow that. And it literally became a form of fascism, of corporate government collusion. Is that from capitalism, or how would you tell people to deal with that? Or what do you think that was a result of what we're dealing with right now, this big tech corporate government collusion?
I wouldn't call it fascism because, you know, I live here in Germany, and fascism means our national socialism here, that 6 million Jewish people were killed, yeah, and started Second World War, all this stuff. So I wouldn't compare this, but in the economies, it's not wrong what you say, because this was Adolf Hitler's ideology. He didn't want to nationalize all companies, but his idea was the government tells the companies in the end what to do and what to produce. And here, by the way, this is my favorite topic because I wrote my, you know, I have two PhDs, but I wrote my first doctoral dissertation about Hitler's National Socialism. You can buy this also as a book. It's Hitler's National Socialism. And I analyzed, it was for the first time, I was awarded with summa cum laude, what is the best that you can get for a doctoral thesis, that Hitler was much more anti-capitalist and much more socialist as most people think. You know, he called his party National Socialist Workers Party, and it was in a way. And so this is nonsense that capitalism leads to fascism. On the contrary, it's true that fascism or national socialism is only a form of anti-capitalism.
All right, well, let me ask you this question. In the United States, there's always been an economic debate, and you could call it from, you know, the America firsters versus the globalists. But the idea would be, and one of the narratives is, and tell me what your thoughts on this are, is that China, you know, was obviously up until about 2000, not growing as fast economically, not as, you know, the trends were there, but that the United States, by enabling more free trade, I guess you could say more capitalism, we helped empower China, which then helped gut the American industrial base. And now with the rise of China, they're even taking our monetary policy, and they're literally going to rule the world economically. How did that happen? What do you make of that analysis? And also, is China a capitalist system, or is it kind of like a mixed system, or how would you explain it, especially with their social credit system and with their controls on the markets?
So let's speak first about China. I know a lot about China. I've been there several times, and a good friend of mine, he's professor at the Beijing University, but he's very much pro-capitalist. And he explained me a lot about China. Look, China, they started with 100%, almost 100% state. In 1981, 88% of people in China lived in extreme poverty, 88%. It's incredible. And then they started with Deng Xiaoping with economic pro-market reforms. He introduced private property, he made pro-market reforms, they reduced the role of the state. And you see what happened today? There are less than 1% of people in China who live in extreme poverty. So this is amazing. This never happened before in history. But now the important thing to understand, what my friend Wang Chang is his name, always tells me, this happened not because of the state, but in spite of the state. This happened because they reduced role of the state because they gave more economical freedom. The problem is, in the last years, they go in the wrong direction again. This was what happened, you know, in the beginning of the 80s, in the last decades. Now, with Xi Jinping, they go back against to more government and more state. You have to distinguish, if you speak about China, about politics on the one hand, of course, this is like no freedom of speech, no freedom of press, one-party system. But I wouldn't call it communism in in the economy, because communism would never have been so successful. No, they were so successful because they introduced more market, more. And this is so when we can learn something from China, that is, we need much more economical freedom. We need not less economical freedom. We don't need more state. We need less state, because this is what happened everywhere in the world. In the moment when you reduce state, then people were better off in the economy. I have a lot of examples in my book. For example,
Unfortunately, we're out of time. Dr. Rainier Zeitelman, in defense of capitalism, sorry to do this, but thank you so much for joining us. Fascinating discussion. I'd love to get into this again sometime, but thank you for joining the show.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
This is the Mark Morano Show, TNT Radio. See you next week.